Ladies and gentlemen, let me heartily welcome the Minister of Transport to today's session, where we will be dealing with a number of issues from his department. I need to indicate, honourable members, that it's going to be a very long day. So ready yourself that you will feel cold, you will eventually feel hot. Because these chambers, these hallowed chambers, are slightly not very user-friendly in terms of the heat and the cold, but I hope that they will be dealing with the whole situation of it being cold. Minister, you are heartily welcome. In terms of our agenda, we are expecting you to make a presentation. We don't want to keep you long here. Post our discussions on the presentations that you will be making. The acting DG will take us through the fourth quarter report, and we want to take CRASSA as the last item of the day, which actually will come after we have had a presentation of the Airports Company Bill and Air Traffic Navigation Services Company Amendment Bill. These two amendment bills will come before PRASA, because we just want to give ourselves ample time to get to know and have an understanding of the vision of the new board of PRASA in the main, and also to talk to them about the outstanding issues which emanate from the erstwhile board of PRASA. Honourable members, you are heartily welcomed. And without much ado, I'm going to request the minister to take us through the first item of the meeting, which is actually a filling of vacant post in the department and in the entities as such, so that we are able to at least be appraised of the developments, because previously, in the fourth quarter or before your arrival, Minister, there was a serious challenge in terms of vacant posts in the department and in the SOEs. Thank you very much, Minister. You're welcome.
Honourable Chairperson and honourable members, thank you very much. I don't know, Chair, before I start, maybe I just need to check, because the agenda I have here seems to be either outdated or different from yours. So you are asking me now, I just want to check, to tell the committee about vacancies in the entities.
Yes, Minister, it's a vacancies, probably it's the vacancies in the department what has been happening, but I'm also trying to make an addition that we have had several challenges in terms of the vacant posts in the SOAs, particular of the boards, not of the functionaries in those entities, if the boards have now are stable and functional.
Chair, just also a second question for clarification. What time are you expecting PRASA?
We requested PRASA to come after lunch.
Oh, yeah, no, I've got a very outdated agenda yet, because I had hoped that they were coming up before lunch, because myself, I would have liked to have listened to that, the board, but it's not possible now to actually change.
Honourable Deflators?
Chair, the agenda that was emailed to us and the one that was given to us as well, it's the same one as what we got in the email, indicates that we'd be interacting with the Minister and PRASA issues from 9.30 to 1.30 today, and only looking at the fourth quarter expenditure report from 1400, from 2 o'clock this afternoon. So I am a little confused myself. I don't know when this change happened, and I'm a little disconcerted now, because it's important that the Minister is here with the board.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. We had to reorganize the agenda this morning based on the fact that there was still some misunderstanding, which actually has led to the board will be arriving just during lunch for the presentation, and hence the reorganization of the agenda. To me, I take it that when you put the issues of the department, the presentation of the fourth quarter report and the other related matters, we need to have PRASA give it time, ample time to can be able to deal with the issues. Because if honorable members, you would remember, there has been quite a sizable amount of issues which PRASA had to give, and I don't believe that giving it like 2 hours will be sufficient for us to can be able to deal with those issues. Honorable Ramatlakane.
No, thank you, Honorable Chair. If I'm following you on the agenda that we all have, also just to verify with the Minister, you are saying on this agenda, item number one is what the Minister will present now. And item number three will then be taken over by the department. And item number four, original, will be that is now number three. It will be taken by the department. And item number two, original, will be number four in terms of the allocation. I think it's still fine. We're going to deal with all the issues today.
Honorable De Freitas.
I hear you, and there's nothing we can do now because it looks like they're not even here yet. But this is indicative of why PRASA is not working. This agenda was decided on last week already and was presumably communicated to them, I believe it was, and now they're not ready and available. This is typical of why this entity isn't working, and I can see what's happening. They're leaving it to the very last so that when everybody's tired and nobody really is listening, that it's left as the last item. These are you know, old tactics that really are just boring.
No.
I'm just expressing my unsatisfaction. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's your opinion anyway. I will not be tired until I finish with PRASA. That's your own opinion. You can have it and forever hold your peace. We're here to do a job, not to throw tantrums. I'm not ready for tantrums today, Honourable Member. Minister, if you can be able to speak. Honourable Ramatlakane, said that I'm not ready for tantrums today. And whoever has got tantrums, the toys are outside.
No, Chair, please bear with me. I am not about to throw tantrums, but all I'm saying, I hear you saying that you have reported that you have seen there are some issues that are still outstanding, and therefore you've delayed the board of PRASA to 2 o'clock for that to be completed. Because if they were to come now, those things were not necessarily going to be taken account. So that's a decision that you as management has taken, and that's a decision you are reporting to us.
Yeah.
It is not a decision of the board of PRASA that they decided not to come now. It's a table that they've decided. And therefore, I think, Chair, I think let's proceed in terms of that direction.
Thank you very much, Minister.
Yes, Chair. Perhaps before I start, I just need to indicate that I'm not available in the afternoon because I have my budget vote at the NCOP. That's why I had hoped that the agenda remains the same, because I would have liked to be here when PRASA is here. Unfortunately, now I can't make it, and it's something I cannot change, because that would be complete disrespect of the National Council of Provinces. I just thought I needed to clarify that I'll be here until one-ish when we finish, but then in the afternoon I've got to go finalize my speech and then go to the NCOP.
Thank you, Minister. I think you will have some of your functionaries here who can be able to report to you of the outcomes of the meeting in your absence.
Fine, Chair, can
we proceed with the meetings? Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Minister, if
Chair, thank you very much. Firstly, let me just say that before I take you through each of the entities and the department, I don't know how to describe this. I got appointed as a minister when most of my entities, their terms of office of the boards were going to expire, and others didn't have full complement of board members. Now, I'm not trying to justify anything. It's both good and bad. It's bad in the sense that we've got to do almost everything at around the same time. But maybe the positive out of it, it's a chance to really give stability to the boards of these entities, as well as the department. On the department, very quickly, I have advertised the post of the DG, and also it's we're in the process of shortlisting, as well as the five DDGs. All that was advertised at the same time. And then we are in the process of shortlisting at the moment. One thing, Chair, that I just need to say is that I am considering maybe starting with the DG post, so that then the new DG is able to participate in interviewing the DDGs without re-advertising the DDGs. I know it might cause some delay a bit, but having been a human resources practitioner in my previous life, I think it's always better to do things that way rather than have a DG who finds, even when there was an opportunity for him or her to have a say, but who then finds that everything is done for him or her. So that's all I want to say for now about the department. Of course, members are free to ask questions if they want any further clarification insofar as the department is concerned. On the SOEs, I don't know whether this has been circulated, the document. Has it been circulated? Yeah. Well, if I start with PRASA, although PRASA is not listed here, just to remind members that I have appointed a board for a period of up to 12 months. That wasn't my idea to do that. But the speed with which things happened, including resignation of existing members of the interim board, I had to move quickly. At the same time, I felt a bit uncomfortable to appoint a board for the full term, because I thought that it would be important that there are further engagements, given the like a chicken and egg situation, because given the enormity of the challenges at PRASA, you do need a permanent board, if you like, or a board appointed for the full term. This permanent or interim is neither here nor there, really. But I then thought, well, perhaps we need to give ourselves time to think about what is it that we need. Perhaps appoint the board for up to 12 months, identify further challenges and so on. Because I'm really worried that PRASA has been in a very bad shape for a very long time. And we must get things right. The board, this one, doesn't have to operate for the full 12 months, but it depends on how then I assess the situation. The other thing, Chair, also was that you remember that when I came in, you as a portfolio committee decided to have a hearing. So I thought that those hearings will shed further light on some of the challenges, which then might inform perhaps the kind of a board that we need. Although the people I've appointed, I've got complete confidence in them. Most of them have got a well-known track record in terms of being people of substance, and who behave ethically and who are committed to the transformation of our institutions. As I had said before, I've been concerned that at PRASA it looks like everything else was a priority except providing reliable public transport. That was like the last item. Everything else. And as I have said, and I'll repeat this, which is also a problem, I don't want to preempt, but I must just say this because it was a further consideration, is that PRASA to me has been like an ATM. Yeah, PRASA has been like an ATM. You know, right now I'm sitting with a pile of things like this, of people saying they have had contracts with PRASA, they've not been paid. Some are not genuine. Others seem to be genuine. That's what I'm dealing with the board chairperson, to say, as a minister, if I get given these things, I've got to give them to you and see how you sort it out. But when I arrived, you will remember, Chair, I had to deal with one big claim by one company called CIA, was it? And there was that court settlement which we had challenged now because there was a disagreement within PRASA as to whether that company actually did perform that job. And one of the first instructions I gave to the board was that challenge in court all the things that you think needs to be challenged, because before it seemed not to have been the case. So all those were considerations in then arriving at saying, maybe let me appoint this board initially for up to 12 months. So I'm not going to go into management, Chair, of PRASA, because you had said we mustn't talk about that. In any case, we'll be dealing with the board. I'm not the one who deals with management, except maybe the point perhaps that I should make is that virtually all the senior managers are acting. We are aware of this. And that's not a very healthy state of affairs. And this penchant of suspending each other like nobody's business, depending on who's acting as group CEO and all that. Now, Sandra, which is now in the document, the board expired in February 2018. I've now extended it till the end of June. We had already advertised, by the way, all these boards that were expiring on the 18th of February and closing on the 5th of March. We're plowing through now the people who have been nominated. We are working at that, and I think that I'm hopeful that by the end of June I would have done Sandra, appointed the board. The cross-border agency has four vacancies. We also placed advert 2018 with the closing date of 5th of March, just like the others, and we are shortlisting. And I am quite keen that long before the board expires next year, I would have filled this long before that. In fact, I want to fill that as soon as possible. The Road Traffic Management Corporation, the board, there are no board vacancies, let me put it that way. The Road Traffic Infringement Agency, the boards were extended 30 November and then till 31st of May, which has gone past now. We are processing the shortlisting so that as soon as possible we are able to deal with that. I am concerned that's a red, because the deadline, I have missed it here for reasons I can go into, Jay, if you want me at some stage. But I'm prioritizing this so that we are able to fill this as soon as possible. Look, I also don't want to cause an upset in the system, Chair. But I must actually say that this thing of every function becoming an agency with the board is something that really bothers me. Why should regulatory agencies have boards? You know, just the waste and the processes and things, you know. But I don't want to be able to raise that now because I don't want to. Then the road accident fund. There are 5 vacancies. Now, let me be open with you here. When I met with the road accident fund, they were fighting like nobody's business. At some stage, I was concerned that there are going to be exchanges of blows just now. And someone of my height is not very good in separating some people. But what was worse was when they came also and continued fighting in front of the portfolio committee. Which was bad. It just gave this thing, you know, which is terrible. I've decided to call an AGM on the Road Accident Fund, which is taking place on Friday this week, to just engage them. But in the meantime, I've said, is it not a good idea that they resign and we reconstitute this board? Because it's dysfunctional. It's dysfunctional. I know these are adults, I've got lots of respect for them. But they can't be behaving this way as if it's us as young boys and girls fighting over marbles, you know. Some have said, because I've said to them, let's say if I decide as a shareholder to dissolve the board, that's not good for your CVs. Is it not better that you consider resigning and gives ourselves an opportunity to reconstitute the board, go and consult and all that? I have not as yet finally made up my mind, but I've asked them. I was hoping all of them would resign so that we get a new chance. Of course, some of them maybe would have been asked to. I could have reappointed them and so on. But that board is dysfunctional. Now I'm being taken to the public protector, by the chairperson of the board. Isn't that the case?
Yeah.
And we shouldn't hide that. Because I'm failing to act against another member of the board that they don't see eye to eye. Now to me that just, I don't want to disrespect people's rights to go to the public protector. I'll also cooperate with the public protector, but I never thought that the role of the public protector is to assist one board member that get rid of another board member. But it's not for me to judge. So RAF is in bad shape. To be quiet, you saw it for yourself. I don't have to tell you this. Now, AXA, we are finalizing the appointment of the board. It's one also board that I'm hoping that by the end of June I would have finalized it. As things stand now, already that board is in a very bad shape because 2 people resigned about a month or so ago. And it, as things stand now, it doesn't meet the requirements of a functional board. I'm very concerned about that. I'm prioritizing this. I've speeded this up. I'm speeding it up so that, the board is there, but there are certain functions it can't perform. Now, I don't want to evaluate whether the people who resigned and the manner in which they resigned was correct or not. SACA, the board is okay. AT&S also, the board is okay. Plus, I've already spoken about it. The rail safety regulator also is okay. DG, am I leaving anything? Oh, SAMHSA, sorry, did I jump SAMHSA? You see, sometimes I still resist, Chair, my apology. It's advertised. SAMHSA is advertised, and I intend appointing the board. It's not in the PET. SAMHSA is still okay so far. I will be advertising and filling the post on time, as well as the post regulator. That's later in the year. It's just vacancies, that's all that we have to fill. That's my story, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. Thanks.
Very much, Minister. Very informative and incisive story. Honorable Members, there we are. Are there issues that should be raised with the Minister in terms of his presentation? Honorable De Freitas, let me start with Honorable Humsinga, Honorable De Freitas, Honorable Mpanza, Honorable Treko, Honorable Ramatlaka. Honorable Humsinga.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, Minister. We couldn't say aye earlier on. Thank you for your overview of how you see going forward, which in terms of legislation is your full prerogative. And therefore, thank you for giving us a bit of insight in how you view the current situation. But then obviously the focus is on getting things established so that at least we get into a better situation than what we currently are, given the overview which you gave of the SOEs. In particular, with regards to PRASA, and if I quote some of the expressions that you used, PRASA is not in shape. You are uncomfortable. And looking at an approach, I experienced hesitance from your side, because as I understood you, you would now first want to have a look at the investigations, have the investigations continue, and then use that platform to then determine, as you put it, to use your words, what kind of board we need. If you would, I would want to understand a bit more about that approach. How would that make it different? Because in a way, PRASA is paralyzed due to all these investigations and interventions which we've had for a couple of years already. And now it's the time to act. So having the opportunity then to be decisive and establish and appoint people that can take firm direction, because I can mention a couple of things that immediately needs to be done in terms of making it a better facility for passengers. Why the hesitance? Why aren't we acting to get the wheels turning, if I may use that expression, with PRASA? Because certainly the investigations can be split. Why do we hereby continue to paralyze PRASA in its operations, in its functioning, by not going ahead and appointing a board? If you would just care to give a bit more explanation about the hesitance which I had the impression from you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable De Freitas.
Thank you, Chair. And may I just initially say that I don't think, certainly under this, in this Parliament, we've had such an honest minister, in that he assesses the situation and hasn't in any way tried to sugarcoat it. I think he's realised the urgency of many of these SOEs. And
maybe you should give him an applause.
I wouldn't go that far, but I certainly recognizing cheeky. I would certainly recognize that the minister hasn't come as we've seen in the past. Some ministers come and sugarcoat it as if we're idiots. He's been very honest that certain entities are in trouble. That's the bottom line. So I want to acknowledge that, Minister, so thank you for that honesty. I do want to then start off by echoing what my colleagues are asking. I'm concerned about this speed or lack of speed in resolving PRASA issues, because there are certain elements within PRASA or connected to PRASA that it's not in their interest for any speedy resolution, and these delays actually accommodate them very well. So I want to understand, why is it so quick? Why is it so easy to appoint an interim board? Also, why is it so? Can it be done so speedily, but not a permanent board? If I look at the people on the interim board, there are some very good individuals who do great service for PRASA in South Africa, and I would personally love to see them on a permanent board. So I want to understand, why is it so quick that we can put an interim board and not a full-time board? And then also, you know, in my research, I see that it's becoming a trend that we have interim boards, and I don't see anywhere in legislation or regulation that talks about interim boards. Now, I can guess what an interim board is, but that's not what I should be doing. It should be very clear what an interim board is and why, and again, why an interim board. Then, and thank you to the Minister for saying that PRASA, they were trying to solve everything excepting moving people, which is what they're supposed to be. That's their core mandate, excepting moving people on rail. So I'd love to hear more about that. And I know it's an operational issue, but I do see there are some top officials here with him. I'd be very interested to hear what is tangibly being done to try and improve our system right now, while investigations are continuing and so forth. Then I'd like also a little bit more. I see that this morning it was announced that the new CEO of PRASA was appointed. I would like to know a little bit more about that CEO. And the reason why I ask is that, for example, if I look at his history, he got into some financial trouble, both personally and professionally. And it worries me that someone of that history has been appointed. Now, I understand it is a 12-month contract, but even so, for an entity that is in such trouble, to have somebody who has that kind of history concerns me. I'd love to know what is the rationale of appointing a CEO like that. Then I'm hoping that our investigation is going to go into that, and I'm hoping that the minister is looking at that and looking at the previous interim board. At the previous interim board during their tenure, there was suddenly a whole plethora of payments made to certain companies. He's mentioned one of them, the minister, which is very suspicious. Those companies were specifically mentioned in the Public Protector's report. And it was as if they were appointed for that specific mission to look after those certain companies. And I know this because it was replies from the minister, this minister sitting in this room, that sent to me in replies to questions I asked. So it's on record. So I want to understand what is being done to hold those interim members, those board members at the time into account. And I would certainly like to see it as part of our terms of reference in this committee. And then last but not least on PRASA is the annual report. If you can give us some light. I think it's embarrassing and an indictment that you still, as of the beginning of June, right now where we are, there's still no annual report from this entity. Then just very quickly, I just want to make a few comments on a few other entities, and that is SANRAL, which, with due respect, I must just say, and I'll mention people by name, until Nazir Ali left, an excellent, well-run, well-functioning entity. And I'm afraid you could see the absolute transformation or transformation in the wrong way of SANRAL. It's become inefficient, ineffective, and spending badly. And I happen to know that there are a lot of officials and good people in that entity that are incredibly unhappy with the style and the manner of how that entity is being managed. And then the other one that really concerns me, is the RAF. The Road Accident Fund is in, and we saw it, witnessed ourselves how They were like petulant children arguing in front of us. It's really embarrassing. It was, I felt terrible for them. They weren't even to at least even put up a fake united front for us because the divisions are so low. And I absolutely agree with the minister. There's no doubt there's all sorts of corruption, in my opinion, and all sorts of funny business going on there. And I would agree to the minister, just if they're not resigning by a certain date, they just all get fired. And a new slate gets put in there. And then last but not least is AXA. There certainly are problems. There have been a lot of tensions. They've just been able to hide it better than, for example, the RAF. But certainly there have been tensions. There have been recent resignations, as the minister knows, by two very good board members, in my opinion, of AXA. And there are major issues there with the CEO. And it really worries me that there are allegations against the CEO, whether they're true or not. They appear to be ignored or not being investigated, or whatever the case is. Certainly if I was in the shoes of the CEO, I would want it to be investigated to clear my name and so I could then move on with my job. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable De Freitas, Honorable Mpanza.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Mr. Minister. I think, Chair, the presentation by the Minister, it's actually indeed a breath of fresh air. And I think it's indeed the ushering of a new dawn in this department. Chair, I'm not going to be long. I'm just going to ask one question. What are the timelines for filling of both board vacancies and senior management? Specific timelines, because I think there is an urgency to deal with that issue in terms of the governance. So I think I would like to know that. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Teko.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, everyone. I also, Chair, just want to appreciate the commitment shown by the Minister, more so that he is prioritizing the recruitment and the actual appointment of a Director General in the department, so that the new person also takes participate in whatever process that's going to be there. And also with regards to RAF, Chair, we witnessed what happened that day. How I wish they can just sort out their house there. With regards to Prasa, Chair, I think the Minister observed what we observed. That's why we recommended that investigation. We also detected that crisis that is there. Otherwise, Chair, I fully support the report and acknowledge it. Thank you.
Honorable Ramatlaka.
No, thank you. Honorable Chair, I also just to thank the Minister for detail, for blow by blow. On the board. My question is slightly different from the others. It's a kind of a general question. Just to understand, Minister, in terms of, because some of the concern that we had in the, it's over probably close to 2 years that we've been having this problem with the entities and the board. But it wasn't only that. There's also been the lack, or maybe the lack is not the right word, maybe the inadequacy of the stakeholder compact. Now, in some of them, they've been very slippery, to say the least. Some of it we have been asking, can we be privy to the stakeholder compact? Because that's an agreement between the minister and the board on one side, and also the agreement with the group CEO on the other hand with the board, in terms of the, including the whole thing on management in terms of the Company Act. Maybe if the minister could also just share a light. I know it's a short so short period that you have taken the reins, but unfortunately you take the reins and add on to the predecessors on these questions. We have made these questions available to the department and all the agencies before about the outstanding questions. The troubling issue has been this issue about the governance. The governance and, if you like, the responsibility, aligning the responsibility, particularly if you follow the King Code 4. The King Code 4 specifically deal with corporate government. So the question that I'm really asking is whether at this point, at least that we are here, we can be privy to some of those social compact that has since been signed, because my understanding is that the boards, by and large, will have to implement the vision of the country, which is derived out of the NDP and so on. So, and that will be part of what the deliverables would include, which also help to evaluate the delivery or non-delivery of the group CEO on their part of the social compact aspect. So if we can just get the feedback from the minister on that, of the existence thereof, or making it available, let's see, so that at least we know, now that we've been struggling to get, now we can at least have access to that. Because unless we understand the social compact, not the social stakeholder compact, it's also difficult to keep the agency to account on what they have commit to implement. For an example, the issue of PRASA, if you come closer to the issue, the social compact, so stakeholder compact, what is it that we need to do? I mean, you have a metro rail challenges, we have all lots of other things challenges, which I suppose is part of that, what the minister would have said to the board, help me to deal with these issues. So I think that's for me the really first question that I want to get. The second one, which is associated to that, I know, Minister, you in the schedule you do indicate the agency. One of it, if you look at PRASA, by making an example, is that once you have a board that does not correct, you run the risk of legal and illegal action and activities. One of it has been the issue with PRASA. Once the board is not correcting, you have nothing moves, everything is standstill. So the question I'm raising in relation to the vacancies or non-correcting, because now it's May, it's June. You would have required that some of those entity would have to sign some of their financial statement. They have to prepare the annual report, which is the function they can only perform with a board that correlates. If it doesn't correlate, that doesn't happen. If it doesn't happen, a report doesn't come to Parliament. That's one of the crux of it. Then the question is then becomes, how do we legalize some of the activities that has been undertaken by the board that is not correcting? There are some of it here that already mentioned. What do they do if they don't have they don't correct? Clearly, it becomes a matter of law, matter of company law. Now, I don't know, Chair, but my concern is really keeping the hands on the handle, making sure that the issues that suppose that the board is proper, keeping the handle on the agreements, and those that exist. In the all that you have now inherited, some of those stakeholder compact, I think if we could get a pile of just indication, because we go into the annual report, so that we can evaluate. Otherwise, we evaluate on the basis of a presentation, which is not necessarily telling us what are the achieved results. Now, Minister, if you can just reassure the committee in terms of maintaining a legal board, at least. And I know the honourable person behind me talks about what is an interim board and what is not interim board. The board is a board, whether it's an interim, has all the powers invested in terms of the act. It's a term that is used, it's a feeling of vacancies, really. So the question, if you can just give assurance whether there is going to be at least meeting this time frames for the annual reports, for signing off on the document that need to be signed off by the board. Some of the board, if I be specific on the RAF, there has been lots of allegations, and I want to be specific, of conflict of interest in the board, in the function of a board as a board member, and the function of a board member as a professional, for an example, a doctor. That has been dragging on for some time. Now, the mechanism to resolve something that, surely it lies outside of the committee. It lies somewhere. How do we going to resolve that? Because particularly on the function that has got the bugs at the end of it, and the people with the profession, particularly the RAF one. And I don't know how it's going to be dealt with. I know you said that there was a call for them to leave, but if they don't, but isn't it an issue that if there's a conflict of interest, such action has to be taken? The allegation was, this conflict of interest has been put into the door of the acting DG or the DG before, and actually nothing is happening. There's some kind of a protection that you see. At least you have senior officials here. We at some point receive a written document from the other doctor in that, to say this is what we have submitted. The department keeps shifting, and that's not necessarily the responsibility of the minister. It will be somebody that has been taking that in the office of the DG or acting DG or DDG that deals with that particular agency. It worries if the perpetual that thing continues, it becomes an issue that is not necessarily dealt with. And maybe if you don't know about it, we have a volume of that document. An allegation has been that it has been submitted to the department, but there's no action. Now that we have at least you here, we have to download some of this issue to your good self. Unless you say you didn't know about it, we didn't tell you that. So this is some of the things that, and I can go down the list, but I don't think we have the time. But the question I'm asking is really that broad stroke, general reassurance in terms of what is it that you need to go and do, because we have seen deadline that are elastic. If we can cut out of that elasticity of the deadline. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Ramatlakane. Honourable Sibande.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, I wanted to apologize to you in particular and the committee at large due to some commitment outside here. That's why I delayed. And I wanted to join my colleagues to thank the minister about this presentation. Coincidentally, no matter I was not here during your prayer, during we were doing your presentation, but we did receive copies of the presentation in advance. Minister, I wanted to comment in particular. You see, number one, I'll go to RAF with the concern which is raised by my colleagues in terms of the Road Accident Fund. I think here, through what we have experienced while they came before us. My worry is that I know that your response said the process is still on of filling the positions or to make them to form a quorum. But what is the key fundamental question is by when? Because the more we delay, the more there are problems. I'll put an example. As we are talking now, there is that process of with the process which is taking place in terms of the RAPS bill, of which we need those people to be there. If you can assist us that by when. And then also, you see, our little experience is that, you see, Minister, it's not about filling the vacancy only, but also I think we must develop an instrument or a system how to monitor them as well. Because if there is no instrument of monitoring them, here comes the question. I'll put an example. Most of the time, some of the entities, when we call them to come and account to us, they don't send senior members. They don't. They always send junior people who cannot take sometimes decisions. That's where is the problem. And it makes us, in terms of our line function, sometimes make us to be, make us to be difficult, maybe, with some of the things. And another challenge which I wanted to put on you is that this allegation of collusion in terms of NRAF, that is an allegation, but you know, some people are taking an advantage because if I can work in a certain board, whatever, anything happened, then I decide to resign. What else? That means government has lost. If we can maybe develop something even then in that regard, maybe our problems can be solved. Because some people, they know very well that if I fail to this board, next time they will appoint me to another board doing the very same thing, same culprit doing the very same thing, what he did in the previous board. These are some of the challenges which we're facing. And then again, Minister, a practical example again. My colleagues, I'm subject for corrections. There was a time where we had a problem with the RSR, if I'm not mistaken, in terms of the signal. One official told us point blank that if this doesn't happen, this thing, we're going to make sure that the signals are sabotaged. Some people are so brave even to tell us some of these things which are like this. These are some of the weaknesses maybe which we see, that if you can tighten the screws, that anybody would come up, we must tighten the screws and then everything will be sorted out. Last one is that one, I'm just, maybe my colleagues has commented, that one of BRASA, which took a long time to present their report, of which it makes for us very, very difficult in terms of towards the budget votes, while they didn't submit their report. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. Minister, it's your turn for you to can be respond together with your team probably to issues that have been raised by members of the Portfolio Committee. I want to outright indicate that we definitely will be very happy if you can do something about RAF, because when we were dealing with their APPs, a lot of things were not gelling together. We indicated to them that they must go and redo the APP, because we could feel that when you have a number of targets which we believe really the targets are not smart, it therefore means that you'll just be going haywire in how you will be dealing with the issues. We have also said to RAF that there's a lot of issues not going right, and therefore we need the board to institute a forensic audit so that we can be able to know what exactly are the issues there, because you can clearly see that the more you put the money into RAF, the bottomless the pit becomes. And we are happy that they're doing a good job, but somewhere we can't put our finger on the pulse as to these claims and everything which is happening rightfully and legally the way we anticipate them. And I think my colleague has spoken to the issue of the board, that it definitely is a very good thing that we can see progress with respect to all the boards of all the entities. Challenge is, we have seen with BRASA last year, when the board was not correct, they were unable to really sign off a number of documents. The annual report, now it was their APPs and the corporate plans, which actually we were unable to really say we endorse these corporate plans based on most of the things that we see. And we say the role of BRASA is passenger rail of South Africa, in South Africa. We anticipate them to really focus on making sure that the commuters are taken from point A to point B. But the challenges that we are seeing, it be here in the Western Cape, you go to KZN, there's a number of challenges which are happening. And therefore, it tells you that there is operational challenges that needs to be looked into. Part of the things that we said to the previous board was, one of my colleagues indicated that they are not a board for security issues, but they are a board for passenger rail in the Republic, because every time they come, they would say, we want to put a wall on the railway, along the railway tracks here in the Western Cape. We want to hire 88 security companies. We want to hire the aerodromes. And the fourth one was, I've forgotten, the armored guard. And it's an indication that they have disengaged from what their mandate is all about. They now want to be a security apparatus. Because if you look at these four things that they were talking about, really, they are taking over from Minister Kele as a minister who can be able to make sure that all South Africans are and feel safe. Why don't they talk to the minister and say, assist us because we are challenged here? We impressed upon them on a number of issues that we believe they can be able to do, but that is water under the bridge, and we are anticipating that the new board that will come will be able to work towards being a rail entity, which will be able to make sure that all rail issues are dealt with. Minister, this is a umphako for you that I'm giving to you. We have spoken for the past 2 years over the question of Transnet and BRASA. It can't be right that BRASA must pay Transnet for using the railway tracks in the Republic of South Africa. It can't be right. And therefore, we giving you to say you need to go and talk to the Minister of Public Enterprises to say we're not seeing the rationale for, you belong to the same WhatsApp group, sort of, that the other WhatsApp group must pay and the other WhatsApp group must receive. can't be right. It really is to us, the former CEO, acting group CEO is here. We spoke about it. We had a meeting with the Portfolio Committee of Public Enterprises, and we believe that this must be dealt with as speedily as is possible. The same applies to, what is that, not the ports regulator, but the other one which is dealing with the ports. Yes, you have a situation where in terms of the Act, you're supposed to have certain issues, including Shosholoza May. Transnet is really very good at looking at lucrative businesses and leave the other businesses which are not lucrative to the others who are supposed to be there. By the way, actually, as there is a look into the state-owned entities, you need to have what is rightfully yours. We are not saying that you must be a master of all you survey, but we're saying SAA belongs to you, Transnet belongs to you, and therefore they should be able, because you can't have policy developed in this other, and then you have operational issues being dealt with somebody else. I remember the other time when Minister Maswangany had to make an intervention in Zimbabwe when an SAA flight was grounded in Zimbabwe. And you ask yourself, where is the Minister of Public Enterprises? Because SAA belongs to that particular minister. Policy this way, operation this way, it doesn't gel, it doesn't work. And this is the mpago that I'm giving you, food for thought and food for action. That should be actionalized as we're dealing with making sure that the SOEs becomes operational. Minister, your responses, please, to honourable members.
Thank you very much, honourable chairperson, and to honourable members for their questions and comments. Where perhaps I will need some detail, I'll indicate and perhaps ask the officials to assist me, or if they identify areas where I might have missed, so that we are able to respond as comprehensively as possible. Look, Babu Msinga, Honorable Msinga, there is no hesitancy on my part. I think I covered this in my budget vote speech, that insofar as the board of PRASA is concerned, they must move on everything that needs to be done. I'll just highlight a few. I've said, for instance, to them, there's the public protector's report. Go and study it. Of course, the problem at the moment is that technically they can't do anything about it because it's facing a court review. Verkman's investigation, I'm told, has got 6 reports. I've said they must go and study those and act. One other thing also I found at PRASA when I was appointed was that they were not adequately defending some court cases that were brought against PRASA. I said, go and defend PRASA. In fact, that was one of the reasons I saw it as an ATM, because I couldn't understand why certain claims, people making claims, and if we're disputing them, they were not being defended. Sometimes it was because of internal disagreements within PRASA itself. Now, I've said everything that needs to be done, they must do, including, by the way, submitting a report to Parliament. You may be able to ask them this afternoon, when are they submitting it, and you hold them to that. I've told them that they must do this as soon as possible. Now, even the issue of security, which you also raised, Chair, You know, the appointment of a new board, for me, must lay the basis for really beginning to turn Prasa around to be able to do what it is supposed to do. And you'll remember in my budget vote speech, I also committed that I will play my own role in engaging all the stakeholders, priority being Cape Town, Metro Rail. In a way, I'm not saying you abandon the others, but why is it difficult to deal with some of the issues, including security? Prasa is giving out millions for security, but there's no impact. There's hardly any impact. And it can't be business as usual and continue. I don't want to preempt things, but I have said to the Minister of Police, I would like us to sit down and discuss the issue of security, not only, by the way, in rail, even in places like airports and things like those, because those are very important institutions for us. So I'm not hesitant. The only thing I was being frank about was that it was a bit of a dilemma as to how long to appoint the board for, given the other considerations that I had outlined. But they are a board. I'm expecting them to act, including stabilizing senior management. It's people I have confidence in, because the people I've chosen are people that have a track record of ethical behavior, commitment to transformation, and commitment to serving the people of our country. So I want to put you at ease insofar as that is concerned. And the committee can call upon us to report now and again vis-a-vis progress on some of these things that we have given to the board. Honorable De Freitas, thanks for the kind words, although I may be in trouble as a communist for getting positive evaluation from a liberal, you know, I don't know what. But otherwise, thank you very much. Look, let me take the issue of the acting CEO first that we are raising. Because ultimately I appoint, although acting is slightly different, the board did actually approach me and say, look, here is a person we've identified who we think can actually be able to come in and act. Let me also just tell you why this is very urgent. There is actually no acting group CEO. It's the company secretary who is acting. I'm not happy about that arrangement, because it was just a desperate situation. And also, we thought that given the challenges, and without prejudging people whatsoever, I don't want to be misunderstood, it's better to get an outsider to come in and act, whilst then we are preparing to advertise and get a permanent CEO. My own legal advice, and in checking at the person has not been charged or arrested, found corrupt, and all that. I'll say something, Honorable De Freitas, which I feel very strongly about. You will find it very hard for any black South African who grew up under apartheid whose name has never been in the credit bureau. In fact, some people say, we are not a genuine black South African if your name has never been on a credit bureau. I've been in the credit bureau, including my cards that were taken away, credit cards, because I couldn't afford and so on. I don't think we can punish people for that. You need to look at the nature of the debt. You know, is it out of recklessness that may have been proven? Or is it just difficulties? Difficulties, you know, that we've faced. Also, I happen in my other life to be involved in the financial sector campaign. I know the seriousness of this problem. Even today, unless there is a court that says this person is not a fit and proper person, I'm very reluctant that we should punish people. Many of us here would not be here today. I have no doubt about that, DJ. and Chairperson. Possibly yourself, you would not be sitting there. Get my call out. I said, fine, I'm willing to live with the person because there isn't anything that I have. That's not tolerating corruption, that's different. Well, to other sections of South African society, I suppose it's a shame to have a debt. But to the majority of black South Africans, it's normal. It's normal. Unless I'm wrong, unless I pick up other things, then I can raise that with the board. I've already answered the issue about the annual report, that they must honor the submission. I find it embarrassing myself that PRASA has not submitted an annual report. Well, I don't have a problem, by the way, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, if we call Sandra. And I'll make my best effort also to be here so that if members have got issues that they are raising, they need to raise. I'm not saying that Sandral is perfect, but it's one of our best entities, to be quite honest. I'm not saying they do not have. There are certain concerns myself that I have about them, but the president was telling me, President Ramaphosa, that his first state visits that he undertook in SADC, because rightly so, he started at SADC. All the presidents were saying to him, when will you also help us to have the highways that are as good as the South African highways? Every president in SADC. Such that the president said to me, I would like you as transport to engage your counterparts and see how can we better cooperate as part of using transport to support regional integration. So Sandral has got this reputation. It's got challenges now, especially around ETOL, the GFIP. But if members have got concerns, they need to call Sandral, call me if necessary, so that we are able to address the issues. AXA. You know, I'm a little bit reluctant, Chair, to comment in any detail on AXA. Because the things I'm having now, the issue of the CEO, let me deal with the issue of the CEO. None of the previous boards have adequately dealt with the allegations that are being leveled against the CEO. That is the sense I'm getting. That there were disagreements around how this matter should be dealt with. What have I done now? I've said, look, because also, the CEO must be given a chance to respond to allegations and not be subjected to kangaroo court processes. I have then said, the board approached me and said his contract is coming to an end. When? May. On the 15th of May. So what do we do? Because the acting chairperson of the board, Mr. Dion Porter, that I have appointed, came to me and said, Minister, the contract is coming to an end, but to be honest with you, we can't leave such an uncertain situation. We want to propose that maybe you extend for a few months whilst you are appointing the board. And one of the first things that the new board must do is to then go into this matter of the allegations against the CEO. So when the board then told me that their decision is to extend till end of November, if I'm not mistaken, I concurred and said, that's fine. Because Mr. Maseko also must be given an opportunity to answer for himself properly, as such that we don't turn this thing into a kangaroo court. Honorable Mpanza, Well, the timelines, I think I've indicated for filling the vacancies in the boards. They will partly determine by time, when is that going to happen. I still have some time with others, and there are a couple of ones that I'm already on extra time. So that's why we are trying to speed up. Also, what I want to say maybe in relation to the point that we are raising.
Must go into penalties.
I hope not, Jefferson. I hope not. Where's Bafana? Bafana lost on penalties in the COSAFA Cup. You know. What I also want to say is that I want now, I think that I've developed a little bit more confidence, Chair, that I want to appoint boards permanently for the full time, let me put it that way, and not be doing this thing of 12 months, you know, and so on. I think I'm beginning to understand the sector. Of course, you will know, Chair, that appointing boards is not a very easy process, by the way, in itself, because you have to balance so many imperatives. Racial composition, the issue of gender, the issue of sectors, though board members do not represent the sectors they come from, but you must take into account that you can't have a SANRAL without someone who understands rail. I mean roads on the board of SANRAL, or rail in the case of PRASA. Thanks, Honorable Cele, for your those were comments and ideas. Honorable Ramatlakane, you know, I don't want to talk, Chair, about matters that are not in my purview. I'm not the president. But I can't help, and also this mustn't be misread as if I'm now arguing for me to remain as minister forever. And I'm not prejudging anyone by what I'm going to say. But, Chair, this endless reshuffle has got devastating negative impact on departments. You know the reason why, for instance, there are vacancies of DG and 5 DDGs? Largely has got to do with that. The last two ministers were in the middle of the process and then they were gone. So a new one comes in. Now Nzimande comes in also, have got to start from scratch. I hope that we will finalize this sooner rather than later. But that's not in my purview. I mustn't be understood to be challenging presidential prerogatives. I'm just talking, as I move into this department, I can see there may be good reasons for reshuffling, but I can see the negative impact this has had. I think as part of the new dawn, we can concede those things, you know. Maybe at some stage when I finish, the officials may want to come in on this matter of stakeholder compact. But what I want to say is that all entities, Honorable Ramatlakane, do have shareholder compact and performance agreements, especially for 2017-18, they did. We are working on the 2018-19 because normally those are done better after the submission of the APPs. But the officials may want to add on that. All what I want to say is that there is a related issue there, which I raised in my budget vote, the issue of effective oversight over entities by departments in the first instance, let alone by yourselves as a portfolio committee, which is necessary, but by departments themselves, because I find that sometimes there's a very fraught relationship between departmental officials or departments and entities. That is why I did indicate that I'm establishing a branch that must deal with effective oversight over these entities. Because that's also important, because you don't want to deal with problems, you don't want to deal with matters when there are problems. If you can be able to deal with them as they emerge, or prevent some of the problems from emerging, that's even better. Now, PRASA, of course, as you are aware, the board is correcting, there may be a few challenges with regards, has Treasury given us their representative? They haven't, but I have spoken to Minister Nen that it is very urgent that we get a Treasury representative. It's correcting, though, the Board of PRASA now, even without that representative. It is correcting. I wrote half a sentence here now. I can't remember what it was. If I've missed something, Honorable Ramatlakane, perhaps the chair will give you a chance to come back. Yes, these allegations of conflict of interest at RAF have been raised. DG, I can't remember exactly where we are, because that's part of the problem, that there are counter-accusations. There are counter-accusations. So the ideal thing is that if, for instance, we have a new board, it must go into those matters. Because the current board, I don't see it being able to investigate that on its own. Maybe then you may say the minister needs to set up a process. That's what we are looking at. Those are the things that we are looking at the moment. But the most urgent thing is that that board is dysfunctional from where I stand. But we are aware of that and many other allegations that are there. And I've also got dossiers from one side say, look at this. Then the other one says, the one who is accusing me of conflict of interest, look at this. So we will have to deal with those things, because we can't let them lie. The issue is, what's the best way of dealing with it, whilst at the same time we are trying to deal with a dysfunctional board chair. But these are priorities. Honorable Sibande, when will we get clarity? Well, I hope the Friday AGM is going to help us to take us a step further. Maybe let me not preempt that now. Although I'm not unsympathetic, but I don't want to be misled, to what Honorable De Freitas is saying in terms of dealing with RAF. But I don't want to preempt, because also some people have made representations to me, you know, and so on, and we want to have to listen to them on Friday. Then maybe something on Friday will be able to give us a way forward. Although, by the way, whatever happens on Friday, you won't deal with all these problems just through one meeting. It will may also clarify then what needs to be done. I do take your point about we must be careful when appointing board members. We mustn't just reappoint people that have not proven to be very effective. I've spoken about the issue of security, by the way, because that's a priority for me, the security of our trains. Chair, we agree with you, as you have said, the challenges at RAF, safety, which is a matter. Just the last two points. Already, I've asked my office to arrange a meeting between myself and the Minister of Public Enterprises, Minister Kotan, to discuss not just the Transnet matter, by the way. Together with Minister Nene and DPE, we must also discuss SAA. I'm sure you experience the same thing, that you get berated about SAA, yet SAA people do not understand that SAA does not fall under transport. Sometimes I've got to keep quiet and absorb the punches, you know. because after all, we are same government. But it's very difficult for people to say, what? You Minister of Transport, you are not in charge of SAA, you don't know what is going on. That's another thing we need to discuss, because many people have, including cabinet colleagues, by the way, have raised lots of problems about what's going on at SAA. So that's another thing I want to discuss with now, together with the Minister of Finance, because remember, SAA, as we speak, is under Treasury. It's not, it was moved from DPE to Treasury because of its financial challenges. As well as, Chair, this important question, I want to discuss with Minister Kodan the issue of the relationship between Transnet and PRASA, as well as Transnet, the role of Transnet Ports Authority and us as ports regulators, and the role of the Department of Transport. There are lots of issues that we want to discuss, and we hope these meetings will happen sooner rather than later. I don't know, DJ, is there anything maybe you feel you need to say something with the permission of the chair?
Go ahead, DJ.
Thanks, Minister. Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I think the Minister has dealt with almost everything. I was actually very surprised. He dealt with them quite the way we would have been there in the department for a very long time. But I just want to indicate this issue of a creating board and a properly constituted board, because that's where the confusion always comes. Now, a creating board is the one that has certain minimum number of members that are required to take decisions that then become legal. But properly constituted board is what actually the enabling legislation would want to say. If it says there must be a person from Treasury, I think recently AG has had an issue with us on that, that if that person from Treasury, irrespective of the number of those that are forming a quorum, if that person is not there, then the board is not properly constituted. So that was the issue. But all of these answers are then answered in terms of the PFMA responsibilities, not the Company Act responsibilities or came for. But PFMA responsibility in terms of then who is the accounting authority. If the board of directors of a company or a state-owned company is the accounting authority for that company in terms of discharging the responsibilities of the PFMA. Now, if that company does not have a board, then that responsibility falls automatically to the CEO or any other person so appointed by the relevant treasury to become the accounting authority. That is 49(3). So I think we need to separate those in terms of who needs to sign financials, annual reports, and so on. We don't have that issue here anymore. We had it last year with the PRASA issues, but this year we don't have it. Almost all of them, up to the point where we were supposed to submit on the 31st of May, they had accounting authorities, including RAF, by the way. And then the other thing, I think just to correct, the issue of the RAF, the very first letter from the chairperson about conflicts went to the minister. It had to go to the minister, not the acting DG. The acting DG was brought in when the chairperson felt that he does not get a response from the minister. But over some time, for over a year and a half, it has always been the chairperson against A members. I mean, not the board against A members. It has always been two individuals. And hopefully, I think, like the minister's indicating, some of those issues will then get clarity and probably get onto the process of being finalized starting with the meeting of Friday. RFR, I don't know in what context it was said that when something's not done, then there's sabotage signaling. But if that has happened, and surely if we get to know the details, that is criminal. You don't sabotage signaling for whatever reason. That is a criminal offense. That person must be locked up. If somebody can say deliberately for any reason, or dissatisfaction or whatever reason, says he, it's like somebody saying, "I will go and rip off a cabling." That is criminal. So I don't think that we can discuss that further, except to say, if that has happened and it was said in the context that you want to understand, it has been, we definitely have to take action against people who make such a statement. It's very irresponsible. And I think the minister has dealt with almost everything.
Chair, with your permission, one small but very important thing that I forgot, which was raised by Honorable Ramatlakane, is what happens in the case of either non-correlating or improperly constituted board, they take decisions. That is why, as I say, I'm aware on one or two boards I'm on extra time, and I really need, it wasn't out of choice, I really need to act with speed, which is what I'm trying to do now. But as far as I'm aware, normally when that happens, you will then ask properly constituted boards either to endorse decisions that were taken at a particular stage or to not agree with them. I think there is some procedure that must allow for that. Otherwise, sometimes, what do you do when you wake up tomorrow, a whole board, maybe there are only two or three people left, and we have to undergo through a process, because I can't just then say, well, here is a board the next day. Because we also get challenged, by the way, as ministers, in terms of administrative procedures and so on. So normally that's what gets done. It's not ideal at all, because you are right, that poses serious risks and threats. Thanks, Chair.
Are you okay?
No, Chair, I only realized at an advanced stage that any question around transport is fine, and not just as we started questions around boards. So if you would allow me one question to the Minister, I will appreciate the Chair. I can't really see you from here.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. Minister, you mentioned conversation with public enterprise, also SAPS, especially around the security on Metro Rail in particular. And I just want to add this bit of researched information that I would also suggest that you engage with Justice Department. Because if I look at the conviction rate between Gauteng province and the Western Cape, it's quite apparent that something is wrong. And I'm talking of judgments and cases around vandalism of equipment, as we spoke of in the last couple of comments now. There's an 80% conviction rate on vandalism charges in the Gauteng province and a 5% conviction rate in the Western Cape. This certainly raises a huge question. How come? And therefore, I kindly request you to please also engage with the Justice Department around this. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable De Freitas.
Thank you, Chair. I also wasn't aware that we could have a wider scope in questions. I just wanted to follow up with what you said, actually, Chair, and to the Minister, and just emphasize it, that I believe one of the biggest impediments to growing rail in South Africa is this tug of war that exists between Transnet and PRASA. I believe that the real root of it is a lot of powerful officials in both entities protecting their perceived or otherwise empires and turfs, and not thinking about transporting goods and people and coordinating it in such a way that it will be used most effectively to move people and to grow our economy. And I'm very excited to hear, it's the first time that I've heard a minister say he is or will be interacting with the Minister of Public Enterprises to discuss this matter. Because it really needs to be sorted out, and it needs to come under one umbrella, ideally under transport, so that it can be properly coordinated and rail transport can be properly coordinated. And if I talk to people in PRASA, the frustration that they experience, you can't even imagine. When they want to do their job, good people that we have in PRASA, they want to do their job, but they're not able to because they can't use certain infrastructure at certain times when they need to, all that kind of thing. It's crazy. It's a crazy situation. So I just want to use the opportunity to urge the minister, this is really critical, and I suspect that it's not being spoken much about because the big brother of the two, which happens to be Transnet, is kind of making it almost as a non-issue, because it's a non-issue for them because they are the ones who control the main infrastructure. But it's the people in the end are suffering. And that's not even including all the other issues that we're talking about. So I just wanted to re-emphasize that. That's very important. Thank you.
Honorable Ramasakana.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. And thank you, Minister, for some of the responses. Just by way of follow-up on some of the responses. I respect all the processes that you are embarking upon, but this thing still troubles me, and I must say so. When there is a conflict of interest and there's allegations in an established body, and that is a conflict of interest is going like this. I'm a board member, and I'm a doctor. I sit on this side, and I determine the claim on the other side as a doctor functionary. And it's brought to the attention that this matter seems to have a conflict of interest. It must be a matter that receives its attention as a standalone issue. Because if it continues in perpetuation and it continues to happen, it raises the problem. For an example, as to whether that conflict of interest, it does not influence the payment. And this issue has got to do with payment of claims. And I don't think that it's a matter for me that will wait for reconfiguration of the board. Either if there is no system in the board how to deal with that claim, there should be a process that is established to deal with it, to check the veracity of that claim and then take an appropriate action. But if you reduce it to a conflict between the two, that goes over a year, it's certainly a problem. So I just want to, I know that you have a way to deal with it, Minister, but maybe relook at it as to whether what else can happen on that particular question. The second question, that just a way of follow-up, I agree with the DG about decorating and a properly constituted board and what happened in the event that PMFA kick in. But if the company operates based on the Company Act, of course the PMFA is applicable. But if the company from its establishment has not had the board, then the executing or responsible authority becomes the CEO. But once you have the board, functioning board, and somehow the board fall flat for whatever reason, you can't meet stream changes and say, we're no longer operating on the Company Act, we're now operating on the, we'll use the provision in the PMFA. Certainly it will be a problem of consistency of functionality that can be defective. And here I'm referring specifically to the issue about PRASA, if you remember what this discussion has been. So I understand that, but all I was saying is that in terms of Company Act, this is what you are tied in if you are operating based on that. The last point that I just want to make, that the minister must make short really about this issue, because it worries me. There is this interim board that left. the earlier of the judge or the appointed judge, Makubel. There was lots of issues about the legalities and the decision taken as a result of either perceived or illegal appointment of it, or people who are not eligible to sit on that, which puts the decision of that board in a constant questionable aspect. I heard you say that the acting group CEO has been appointed from outside of the existing company. So I think what perhaps you need to make sure that this is not something that's going to trip you later. Because if you have a company which has a vacancy of a group CEO, ordinarily what you do as a running establishment, you would appoint a group acting group CEO within. That's in terms of the policy. So if you go and you look at the policy outside of that, and I don't know here, and I'm on my own, I don't know, they may have to help us in terms of what the conduct of PRASA is. I'm just talking about establishment. You would have an acting DG from the department who would source from within, which is a consistent thing. When you have an outside DG acting that is sourced from outside, it almost suggests, it looks like you're contracting someone in. So that has to be checked whether that is in line with the procedure. But if you are contracting someone in, then there's a contract of employment of a particular, whether it's a 6 months, 2 years, 3 years, that's a contract that is allowed. But in terms of this one, I think you need to check it, Minister. I'm worried about it, about the fact that I don't know, was a headhunted, or the board has said to the minister, help us, he is the person. And then they put the minister at the center of controversy. Because if you look at the systems of appointment, the board has a responsibility to recommend. They don't have to start the other way around, because then they shift the responsibility from them to the minister. And then the minister then becomes embroiled. The minister is a final pen, is a recommendation that comes to the minister, says, you considered all these things, then I agree. So on this one, there may well be something that you probably have to check it legally around this, and that you don't also have defectiveness later, or something that says, wait a minute, the board, the minister was the one that made the decision, where was the board? Now, in terms of the code, it's a King Code 4. That's what it suggests what happens. So that's my parting shot about that, that perhaps you need to look at it so that you don't drag along the things that the minister should not be part of it. And I don't know what the legal position will be on this matter. We probably, our legal person must also help us to understand that. It may well be a problem that is now raised, and I think reflecting on it, for me, I just find that there will be a decision later to say, but did we follow a right procedure? The same thing as Judge Makubela's decision may all be subjected to a legal review about whether there was a defectiveness or whether it was double parking on the outside and the inside. That's for what is worth, Chair, but otherwise the rest, I think the board, when we meet with them this afternoon, perhaps they will have to reflect on this, whether they also have a legal perspective on this particular matter. Because one thing that we do not necessarily want to see is the PRASA dragging on while we're trying to fix, then it's getting embroiled in something else, which is ever unending issue. While I'm on the issue of PRASA, let me just say this for what it's worth. And on the newspaper over the weekend, I saw this negative article about the CFO of the department as a secondee representing the department in the PRASA board. Now, it was a difficult reading, that article. I wasn't sure what to make of it. But if you were to look clearly about whether the CFO is permitted to become a CFO on a transferring authority to another authority and to be a board member, it may raise a question. As you sign the check, and then you go to the next meeting, you authorize the implementation of the check that has been signed using the structure of the board. So that, for me, it raises another conflict, financial conflict, and management function conflict overseeing the function of PRASA. It's another matter that perhaps, when you look at it again, maybe ponder over it. Another matter that can take us another age of debate. So I'm raising it, Minister, because if I don't raise it, it will remain a matter of corridors. But I read the article and I said, hey, but I remember there was a gentleman that was in that board. He was not the CFO, but now a gentleman sitting across me, he's going to be in a firing line right from the beginning. So let me leave it there. I'm just raising it because I thought it was a matter that required your attention. And really on a serious note. Thank you, Chair.
Very much, Honorable Tseko. Nothing.
It's just a umpako for the Minister. Minister, now that you have just...
Oh, by the way, as umpako, Honorable Chairperson, I hope the Honorable Member does have a banichao with her.
Yes, yes, your banichao, Minister. Mm-hmm. As we have highlighted that in the next few weeks, you will be looking at CVs and whatever in the process of recruiting board members, Minister. You just caught us as a committee in the middle of something. We were doing something in your absence before you were appointed as Minister. We just discovered a department that is so male-dominated. I'm just putting a fact that you consider women in your appointment in the board, Chair. I'm just putting that forward, just as umpako, as your panichawa. Thanks, Minister.
That's a very nice one, Minister. Honorable Mpanza?
Yes, Chair, I also like panachawa. So I will join the Minister when he's chowing that panachawa. No, Chair, I think Comrade Ramatlakane has raised some very important issues of the boundaries in terms of the responsibilities. And I think I would like us to extend that when we look at it to the members as well, so that it will be a comprehensive thing, because they are very, you know, different lines and responsibilities that we are all given. So we might be talking about that side on the management and the board and the minister, but also we might also be also crossing the lines in terms of the responsibilities and the authorities. So I think it's a very good input, but I think let's extend it and broaden it so that we make sure that we play within the rules of the game, all of us, and don't overstep our authorities. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Kelly. Wishes. Afunukulu. Oh, okay. Honorable Sibanda.
No, I'm covered.
Thank you very much, Minister, and your team. If there are issues, we've given you a lot of mpago, banichau, umlegwa and everything. So if there's other issues that you'd want to respond to before we go into the next agenda item.
Just very quickly, Chair, thanks. I take the suggestion made by Honorable Humsinga, as well as the comments by Honorable De Freitas on the issue of interacting with the DPE. On our side, I think that maybe let me start with the CFO and Prasa Board. To his credit, by the way, he was very reluctant to accept this for the reasons outlined. And of course, I did get advice that that could be very problematic because he's the giver of money, and then he goes to extend that. So we'll address that issue so that everybody is at ease. As well as this, I'm very conscious about these matters of boards and ministers, you know. Where does a decision originate? So decisions of that nature, like we are talking about, acting CEO, what, normally arise from the board. Normally. But I hadn't thought about this issue that you're talking about, of an insider, outsider. Frankly, as I have said, one of our key considerations, or my key considerations, was that we were seeing so much of problems in Prasa, such that we thought it may as well be better if we don't appoint anyone from inside, which also informed the appointment of the secretary, the company secretary, to act. Which again is not a very elegant arrangement, as far as I'm concerned. Our advice is that for acting you can appoint anyone from anywhere, as long as you do it legally. It doesn't have to be an insider. I guess it applies that way also in departments. You can second someone from somewhere else, you know, but maybe we'll look into that. You may ask the board as well, but maybe DG, we also need to look into that ourselves. I think, how can I miss this one? You are right. I have already said this in the department. Because the policy of our government does talk about gender balance. So it's a legitimate point that you raise.
Disability Minister.
Yes, of course. I agree with that. Honorable Ramatlakane was also raising this issue about legalities around the previous board. That's one of the things I acted upon almost within the first week or two of being appointed, you know. One of the reasons why I said to the board, this one, challenge some of the decisions was around the fact that there were lots of things that were being said about who authorized who and didn't authorize what. I want this new board to be able to check these things so that we make sure that we are not on shaky ground. Again, I don't want this to be read that I'm prejudging everyone or anyone, but it's important that we try to stick to procedure as much as is practically possible. Thanks.
Minister, around this issue of conflict of interest, how far can we go? How much time do you have, Chairperson? Now, maybe if we take it from slightly far back, we can understand why perhaps we are where we are now. But in short, the short on all of it is that there are those members that were retained onto the board of RAF and then new members who came in. And one has a sense that this other members wanted to have a say in who comes in. That's the first part. The second part is that, of course, many other things have been done on the allegation of conflict of interest, including to a point where the person who was allegedly conflicted was requested to provide in writing the issues around conflict of interest. So it's not that nothing was not done. It is only that perhaps the alleger wanted a different outcomes out of the process. That is what we are sensing as we go along, because it looks like the alleger or allegers would not rest until their point of view is the one that is carried, including to go to an extent of, I wouldn't call it desperation, to an extent of saying, the shareholder is not helping us on this matter. I've lost faith in the shareholder. Now, I didn't want to get into those kind of details, because the issue around the acting DG is exactly that. That if somebody comes and say, I don't have confidence in the shareholder, who is my boss as the acting DG, how can I help? How can I assist that person? That I found it to be very, very odd. So I wouldn't really, probably because we might be having one side of the issues, we can give in terms of how the process unfolded and how the department has always been acting. We can give that side of the story in terms of a report on what we have done and what we have then found out ultimately. But the long and short of it is that there are two raging bulls who cannot stand each other in the crowd.
Thank you very much, Minister, and your team. I think it looks like members are quite satisfied with how you dealt with the issues. Honorable Ramatlaka.
I think we accept the DG at acting DG's suggestion that at some point you brief the committee, because at some point that somebody was trying to interdict the committee not to listen to RAF from the board.
Thank you very much, honorable members. I think we will have to go to the next item, which is the fourth quarter report of the Department of Transport in the Republic of South Africa. Minister.
In the interest of time, Chair, perhaps let me not say much other than the fact that I'm going to ask the DG and his team to actually go through the report, because things I'm likely to say are likely to cover ground that they are going to cover. In any case, the only thing I don't know how procedural we're going to handle this, because sometimes they say, Minister, make your remarks, and then you start asking the minister some questions. Other times, well, go through the... Because the remarks are going to be contextualizing what is actually contained here. Maybe then you are the one in charge of the committee. I can't decide. But perhaps my suggestion was that let the report be presented, and then...
We are fine, Minister, with that approach, that the report be presented. Acting Director General.
Thank you very much, Honourable Minister, Honourable Chairperson, and Honourable Members. We will try to move with some speed. We normally have the time 9 o'clock to 12:30, 12:45 to ourselves on the report. Now today we have taken some time on the most important issues of engaging the minister. So we'll take it probably as right. We'll go to the highlights and then deal with the maybe areas of challenges in the main.
Honourable members, the document has been with us since last week. Take it as read. Let's get to the key highlights of the fourth quarter.
Chair, then thank you very much, Chairperson. We can jump straight to slide number 4, which is the overall performance for the quarter. We had 35 targets for the quarter. We achieved 31, and then we did not achieve on 4. That is giving us 89%. And that 89% per branch or per program is that integrated transport planning, ITP, rail, maritime and public transport are the ones who dragged us down a little bit in the fourth quarter. The situation has slightly improved or changed in the annual targets from this 89 because one of the branches did definitely then catch up. Chair, in terms of percentages per quarter, we were pretty much worried about ITP, but it caught up still at 86 with a target that has not been achieved, but we have caught up. And then maritime also went down slightly down by 15%. Obviously, this is where you have a lesser number in terms of absolute numbers of targets. That is why even when you miss one, it shows such a decrease, or if you are up by one, it shows such an increase. That should be read with the previous slide, Chairperson. And then year-to-year in terms of comparison, Chairperson, as the department overall last year, we were at 94%. We are at 91%, of course, unaudited, hopefully, because that internally we have then double-checked. It should and will have to remain at 91% come the time when we come to present the annual report that includes the performance information. You will see that we will still have ITP, rail and maritime, who would all have missed 111 targets, meaning then out of 35 would be at 32. The one program that would have caught up will be public transport. Now, I would definitely not want to go much into areas of our achievement because it's more processes and meetings and ITPs, but I just wanted to indicate the state bill has been approved by cabinet has been approved and then it's going to cabinet for public participation. I'm singling this one out because it is the one piece of legislation that would probably try to regulate the relationships between, say, PRASA and Transnet, because it will have to deal with matters of access onto the network. At the moment, we are at the initial stages of an interim rail economic regulator, which is also supposed to deal with matters related to access, and then reduce this monopoly by Transnet, but not shift it towards PRASA, but have an independent discretion in terms of allocation of access. And then the other issue which is of importance in ITP is the Green Transport Strategy and the White Paper. All of those have are now to be considered by a cabinet. And the National Rail Policy in terms of Program 3, Chairperson, which is also, and the Roads Policy in terms of roads, all of those pieces of policy documents are in their very, very final stages. Slide 17, Chairperson of Civil Aviation. We busy and have finalizing regulations in terms of the airports company amendment bill and the ATNS amendment bill. I incidentally saw them in one of the versions of the agenda items of the committee. These pieces of legislation are already with Parliament. Like we said the other time, the changes in there are very minor and cosmetic, and if approved, we should be in a position to operationalize them immediately after being signed off by the president. It was like stuff like Department of Foreign Affairs or Department of Minerals and Energy, who have now split and so on and so on. We are rectifying those kind of areas and cleaning it up. Of the one thing to note in terms of Program 6, which is maritime, is what we are hosting as a maritime World Maritime Day in 2020. This is an annual IMO event. We have requested and have been given the right to host it in 2020. Program 7, Chairperson, one thing to note and importance is that we are at the tendering stage of the revised tax recapitalization program. If things go well, according to how we have planned, the current service provider or the current contract will come to an end on the 31st of August, and on the 1st of September, we should have a new reviewed or revised TRP program, Chairperson. I think the changes in there, one, we have improved the scraping allowance, two, we have now extended scope wider to include matters of value chain around the recapitalization of taxes, including retail installations, fuel depots, and financial services projects. This is what we are doing, and we also then are reviewing the TAT, the Transport Appeals Tribunal. Chair, that is basically what I have said in summary in those slides as they reflect in the APP. I wouldn't really want to go deeper into them, except that we will await for questions. And then the CFO, Mr. Lizalo, will take us through the financial information. I'm sure it's also not so many slides. Or he will touch on the important slides. Thank you.
Good morning and thanks very much, Chair. Mine is a shorter version. I must say, Chair, you would see that we have spent about 91% of our budget, and our performance is 91%. I would not like that to be linked, because I know in the other years when that coincidence does not happen, people are going to ask whether indeed, why is it that you spent 100% but you got 91% performance. It's a coincidence that that happened in this year. So I'll take you to the slide number 27, which is expenditure per program. What you see there, Chair, is that we spent 98% of our administration budget. I think the most important part is the rail transport budget that we spent only 75% of. You'd see that we have underspent 4.8 billion rand, and that was our decision to withhold money that was going to PRASA, because they have not been spending on their capital budget. You'd see that we have about 98% on public transport as well. There's a bit of underspending there due to taxi recap in the main. But the total departmental budget is spent 91%. The next slide just gives the reason for underspending. Compensation of employees, 7.8 million compensation of employees due to posts that were not filled. About 434,000 of that has been moved to ITP, which is program two, to cover their shortfall of compensation of employees. We have saved about 5.7 million and underspend about 1.1 million on goods and services due to projects that we do complete in-house. In our strive not to use consultants as well, reduce consultants' work. As I said, rail transport underspend 4.8 billion because of the last transfer payment to passenger rail agency of South Africa was withheld due to low expenditure in capital. The next slide would deal with road transport. We underspend by only 4 million in compensation of employees and a net about 6 million due to projects that were incompleted in-house. Civil aviation, the biggest underspending is also on compensation of employees. You'd see that most of these areas where we don't have GDGs yet have underspent on compensation of employees due to that. Maritime transport, underspending 7.6 million compensation employees and public transport as well 5 million. You see that there's about 52 million that is underspent on the goods and services, which mainly is the taxi scraping issue. The next slide just gives you expenditure by what we call economic classification, which gives compensation of employees, goods and services, and that. You'd see that it's transfers and subsidies, it's 91% that have been spent, which is the biggest portion of about the 58, which is 4.9 billion underspending. As I said, the majority of that is due to a transfer that was not done that was supposed to go to PRASA. I think the important slide would be slide number 35 from there, which is the transfer payments. You'd see that for PRMG, which is the Provincial Road Maintenance Grant, we have transferred the full 10.7 billion. PTOG, which is Public Transport Operations Grant, 5.7 billion has been all transferred. The Public Transport Network Grant, PTNG, about 6.1 billion of that amount was transferred. About 52 million of that have been underspent, which means that we have held it back. Rural Road Asset Management as well, the whole amount has been transferred. As I said, on public corporation, that's where you see that 4.81 billion that we did not transfer out. Then there are small amounts that we transfer, but the biggest one is at SANRAL. We have transferred all the money that is due to them. The next slide would deal with the smaller transfers that we have. You would see that we have underspent on taxi recap, or taxi scraping by 121 million. The next important slide is this one of the Provincial Road Maintenance Grant. You'd see that Eastern Cape has overspent on the money that was given to them. Spent by provinces, the amount is 1.3 billion, and we only transferred the 1.3, so that overspending does not affect our budget per se. Northwest has got underspent funds of about 86 million, which is the only province that has spent about 91%. I think issues of Northwest, the committee is quite affair with. PTOG, in Gauteng, you'd see that they have only spent 88% of what we gave them, but we have fully utilized that by transferring all the funds to the province, which is about 4.7 billion. PTNG, you'd see Buffalo City has only, we have transferred the whole 55. The municipality has only spent 22 of that. What you are seeing here, Chair, is the mismatch in the financial year ends. Because what you see is that we have transferred money, they have not used it because their year end is at the end of June, so you would see this money increasing over the period. But within our side, we have transferred all the money that we need to transfer. The next part is the rollovers. So we have asked for a rollover of about 838 payment to BRASA for their operations, and we have asked about 103,705 to the Road Traffic Management Corporation for their operations as well. But we are quite confident that the 838 will get. We're still waiting for the agreement on the 103. Chair, that will be all. I just wanted to add, Chair, in terms of the PFMA Section 8.4, the transferring officer is the DG, not myself. Thank you.
Honourable members, there we are. Honourable Sibande, do you want to take? Followed by Honourable Mpanza, Honourable Ramatlakane, Honourable Humsinga, Honourable De Freitas.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I wanted maybe to thank the department for this presentation, but nevertheless, we'll start maybe to interact with them. May you switch it off the other side. Thank you. Chairperson, you know, I'll start with this one of a provincial grant, the provincial road maintenance grant, slide number 87. Yeah, Chairperson, it's all, maybe out of nine provinces, six provinces, they've spent about 100%. Only one, which is Eastern Cape, which spent about more, which is 102. And then the other two provinces, which is Limpopo and Northwest, they spent below 100%. So, Chairperson, maybe if we can get clarity in terms of controlling the money which you're providing to the provinces, because in most of the provinces where you say you are, they've spent more than 100%, but if you can check their roads, my crisis. We don't talk about potholes anymore. You spoke about Mgodi holes. I'll put an example. You go to Mpumalanga. Mpumalanga, where at this moment there are a lot of trucks which are using the roads. The road is very terrible. And also, in terms of your advice, if you give the money, the type of tar road which they're supposed to use, because there is a quite difference with the tar roads which is used in the province and the tar road which is used in the national roads like N1, N2, N3, N4. That is the best tar road. The other ones, I can't even explain. Because the repair now, within 6 months, you'll see crisis. So what is done in order to, the intervention in order to assist in that regard? Remember the first question in terms of monitoring the finances, huge amounts which you are giving them. How do you monitor it, whether it's being used in the proper way or whatever? And then the other one is about the issue of the tax recap. You see, with the tax recap, I can't understand how, where are we going to? It was easy to start, but to go take the process forward, I can't understand. In which sense, yes, I agree, you gave us information that you're busy reviewing, whatever. But simple question, do you have a data of these taxes which are affected? Because as long you don't have a data of the taxes which are affected, this process won't finish. It won't finish. I wonder whether do you have a data. And then again, in one of our slides, you were speaking about the, finance. Goods and spending, that 52 million rands. 52 million rands. Remember, we do have a program of integrated public transport. I don't know where is it applicable. Is it applicable only in the metros, or have you started to decentralize the system or the line function? Because if you talk about the metros, yes, we can see you are Rea Vaya, MyCity, etc. But in some of this area, it's not visible. How far are you in terms of the integrated mode of transport? I'll leave it to you, the chairperson. I'll come to the next round. Thank you.
Honorable Mpanza.
Yes, thanks, chairperson. We are appreciating the presentation. On the performance, Chair, on the year, 2 year performance comparisons, I think we are noting the fact that the department, even if it's not audited, but it's regressing instead of improving, and I don't think that is a good picture. But we are hoping, or I want to paraphrase my question, are you hoping that once it's audited and we have not yet completely finished the fourth year, we still have some days remaining, the picture is going to change? Because I think that's what we'd like to see. And then, Chair, on the issue of under expenditure. I think for me, under expending is as bad as over expenditure. It's something that cannot be condoned except when there are, you know, compelling reasons and exceptional cases. The reason why I am asking that, Chair, in my other life where I was involved as an official myself, there were provisions in the budget of what you call reallocation of funds. I don't know, maybe in the provincial and national governments, whether that provision is not acceptable. But I would assume that local government is also a sphere of government that is similar to all other spheres of government. Because, Chair, to have a $4 billion under spending, because PRASA is having some problems and then management takes a decision to put it aside, to me, it doesn't make sense, unless maybe I need to be educated as to why. Because I remember one day we were sitting here dealing with the APPs, and SANRAL was saying that the reason why they are not able to fulfill their obligations in terms of roads provision was that they've been underfunded. They've not been given sufficient funds. But yet, at the same time, you've got this big amount sitting and not being utilized. So to me, it doesn't make economic and business sense. So, Chair, I just want to be educated as to whether is that
provision of reallocation of funds within the departments themselves or entities, not a tool or an intervention that was supposed to be looked at. And then, Chair, the last one is to do with the public transport network grant. All of them, they've underspent. And we are saying maybe the reason is that their financial year ends in June. We are in June now. And I don't see, you know, like for an example, George in Western Cape sitting at 21 under expenditure. I don't see it unless there will be a miracle that in these remaining days they will be able to utilize all those funds and expend 100%. I also see my municipality where I'm coming from sitting at 44 Msunduzi. And I don't believe that, knowing the situation there, but which is separate from this thing. But the point I'm saying is that the margin is very, very low. They are not even, majority of them, they are not even below, above 50%. They are sitting below, with the exception at least of two. So I just want to check what is the intervention that the department is going to and has put in place maybe to ensure that this situation is improved even with these remaining days. And the last one, Chair, also need to be educated. What happens if the money are not spent? Where do they go to? They are just kept in the coffers of the department, or is there a provision of a rollover to the next financial year? So I'm not sure about that one. So I would like to understand that process. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Oh, thank you very much, Honourable Chair. Maybe let me start where my Honourable Member Mpanza end, in terms of the funds that are withheld from the transfer. You did mention that there was 4.8 or 4.9, if give and take. The PMFA makes provision. I think Section 33 of PMFA makes provision for withholding of the fund for being transferred. But it makes this provision in a nuanced way, that if the function is transferred from that institution to the other, which compel you to transfer it to that where the function is transferred to. But in this case, there's no functional transfer. The functional is remain the function of PRASA. What then happens in terms of retransferring the money? You would wait for PRASA to satisfy department with X or ability to spend. And if that goes to a period of close to a year and comes towards the end of the financial year, is it taken that, does Treasury simply accept that the 4.9 billion that was withheld because of various reasons will then form part of the new arrangement, or is it a matter of if you don't use it, you lose it? I'm just trying to find out, because you have a PRASA predetermined program that run over 10 years with each of those yearly budgeted. I think the last I checked was about 172 or 127 billion in 10 years. So if you look at that expenditure pattern, and one, you are withholding this, what then happens to the following year? Because on your ending slide, you're saying the rollover is maybe, what did you say, 803 or something, 838 million, which is not necessarily the 4.9 if you speak to. So it doesn't explain whether the have they lost the money, or is it now built up to the next tranches of transfer? Because when I was looking at the PMFA, I didn't see that provision. Maybe you can help us, Mr. Altsalo, on that provision. Then what happened? If you satisfy yourself, then the transfer. If that happens, will that, when is this now on the quota, when will it be transferred for whatever program that are supposed to happen if now they have the board, now satisfy that they have the board in place? Sorry that I take long to answer that, to ask that question. When we had a discussion with the, all 13 cities around the BRTs, one of the things we were concerned about whether the expenditures goes to where it's actually required. Obviously, Acting DG, you know that we had a number of interactions about whether the MOU that is signed between the receiving entity as per the DORA is sufficient enough for allocation of expenditure, that you don't spend more than X amount on the consultancy and the other money. So we were concerned about the expenditure patterns. We were concerned about certain expenditure patterns that don't necessarily go into predetermined objectives. So I'm trying to ask that question on the basis of now, when you look at the slide 39, you have the under expenditure in terms of that grant, and I think the CEO says maybe because of the year ending of municipality, which is 3 months or so after the financial year. But if you look at the percentage of expenditure, I don't know whether they will be able to make it. If one municipality has spent 19%, for an example, of the allocated expenditure in the 3 years of a new financial year, because the difference is that it's not a year of difference. It's a, maybe if your sense is that it end up in a dumping site, this, because one thing that we have detected is, I think, what the minister was talking about earlier, about the oversight over entities. As a transferring authority, ability to make sure that you still hold the hands of those that you're transferring to an extent that they are able to spend the money for whatever has been predetermined to. So I'm just asking that question around that. We were unhappy about the spending pattern. We were unhappy about the slowness of this, actually even getting into starting block of expenditure for those grants, particularly around the BRT. If you can help us to understand that. Then on the page 36, I think it's also by just adding on the question that has been posed already. One of the scraping problem, and the DG was saying that we're addressing this particular question. One of the vexing problem in engaging with the taxi industry and their conflict in the Western Cape is got to do with this issue about the scraping and scraping allowance and the ability of the scraping allowance to make them leap into a new venture of either a new vehicle, and they all make mention about the limitation or legislative limitations. And that has not yet been raised with us. The limitation in the sense that the scraping predetermined the date of a scraping. It would say the scraping is implementable if it's 2007. So anything before 2007 is not eligible for scraping. So they're saying, well, you're saying that we are not submitting, but we have said in our national body that the year is the one that is constrained, that we are unable to submit the vehicle. So what do we do then? So I'm just trying to find out from this. Because I know, Acting DG, you said the last time it was because they are not bringing the taxi forward and they are not submitting anything. But the second part they are raising is that the, I don't know whether they mentioned the figure chair would, or whether it was a 70,000, that they said this is the amount that was decided at some point. Has never been any discussion about shifting there in terms of whether the rand value at, as of 2007 and rand value of now is the same. Now, the question that is not here, I didn't find it, I was trying to see it, is the Santaco allocation for the annual allocation in term expenditure. Because it is something also that has come to the attention, our attention, that that issue as well is a concern for the taxi industry, for an example. In fact, before I step off from the scrapping, one of the problems in the Western Cape has been the issue about they unable to get information on the scrapping, while they're scrapping their vehicle, the access to the information around the scrapping in that scrapping allowance as the result of the act, they can't have it. They have a legal court, or a court case, something like that, court cases that is now running between the mother body and the provincial body, which we felt that it's something that could have been intervened by the department as the creator of Santaco itself to find a middle road around the particular problem. If we don't have the detail, we can give a detail after the meeting around that. Now, the one thing that is, Minister, that is quite worrying, BRT, integrated public transport and expenditure thereof, and includes the issue about subsidy to provinces. At the moment, we're dealing with a hot potato of the taxi that has almost have an agreement, tripartite agreement between the City of Cape Town and the Golden Arrow and the taxi mother bodies. Let me make mention the Codeta for an example, where there's an agreement that they would work as an integrated feeder, that they would then be given X amount of money by Golden Arrow, through Golden Arrow, through the agreement. For the last 3 years, they have been operating on this model. But for the last 3 years, they have been undercut by $1 million that they are not getting when they're supposed to get. My information was that the one DDG was going to have to mediate today with the city around this problem. I'm raising this because it shows the... In fact, if I may ask Acting DG, if you are privy to a signed agreement between this tripartite agreement that allocates the resources that has come through that of the subsidy, and then start saying this association will get $1 million in per annum, if we can have as a committee be privy to it, because I think that at the end we would like to know what we are talking about. But that is a source of conflict, because tomorrow is if there's no agreement today, it means the complete withdrawal of the taxi industry in that agreement, and the buses, conflict of the buses then start. Because if the taxi are not operating, means the buses are not going to, because they become targets. And the only thing that is holding this is this agreement. And the department is critical in trying to unlock that agreement in terms of this BRT issues and the subsidy issue. If we could try and intervene, I thought I must bring that issue here. And one of the things that we tried to do was to try and buy time, because you can't have a conflict again after so many people died the last 2 weeks, that now founded at the Golden Arrow, as well as City Cape Town and the taxi industry in the Western Cape. So that I'm raising Santaco is that the Santaco come under spotlight on the basis of representing the interest of those mother bodies in the province and withholding of the information around what is the generated in a scrapping allowance fee, in a scrapping of a fund. They call it a fund. And on the on your expenditure, so therefore Santaco, maybe it would be useful if you could give us a hint about it. I have a few others, but perhaps I have been long already. Let me leave it here. You say on the slides that the city of Cape Town, I think, hasn't submitted information. That's a in bracket that they have not submitted in terms of the updating of transport, that they have not submitted the information. I don't know what that means, whether it's also linked to this issue about the integrated or public transport, and what role are they going to play. If there is no agreement signed with them and this association, there will be a lack of information that has to explain to you how they continue to roll out and how the integration is going to happen going forward. No, thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Ramatlakane. Honourable Humsinga, followed by Honourable De Vreeters.
Thank you, Chair. The under-expenditure of 5.1 billion rand, specifically by PRASA, is huge concern, given that there's a great need. Under Program 3, then, the 75.2% expenditure rate. Then, in terms of the road transport program, I notice that there is a 10%, nearly 10%, it's a 9.2% drop in expenditure by Northwest, if you could explain that to us. But then, not just reasons for not spending the money, in particular interventions, because surely there's a build-up over three quarters, we're talking of the fourth quarter now. What measures were undertaken to prevent this, which now clearly has ended with a close to 10% under-expenditure in a province where a lot of infrastructure is needed. In terms of Program 7, public transport, again, it's all about the BRT in the main, around the voluntary surrender of 52.6 million by Msunduzi Municipality. I did an analysis of expenditure and expenses over a 12-year period, from 2005 to 2017, of expenditure to 13 cities. And of the 13 cities in the past 12 years, about half have less than 50% expenditure ability. It's one thing to say that we've achieved 100% in that we've transferred the amount of money. What benefit did our people get? For the last 12 years, we've been feeding 40.8 billion rands to 13 cities with very little bus services offered. I'm asking the question, on what basis are we continuing just to hand out money to these 13 cities in particular, in the light of that? What value add is there? What benefit do our people really get? Clearly the capacity isn't everywhere, but then we should have identified those incapacities long already, and we can have an exchange of capacity in fields and area where there is expertise. So general comment in terms of where we are with BRT and where we are going with this in light of a 12-year track record, which then expresses that of the 13 cities, less than half have a 50% expenditure ability, but we keep on transferring funds into those cities. In conclusion then, in general, in terms of the responsibility which the department has to maintain a balance between capital expenditure and operational expenditure, there is a clear deviance away from capital expenditure, and just an idea of where we are going, where we are currently, where we are going in terms of prioritizing capital expenditure, because in there is a great need for
establishment of infrastructure, which in the main comes from your capital expenditure. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable De Freitas.
Chair, I'm covered. Thank you.
Honorable Sibande, 1 minute.
Chairperson, I feel that there is a few things, maybe one or two things which have left. Chairperson, as you are aware, that Transport Department is sharing some of its budget with the Department of Education in terms of scholar transport. But I don't think that we have received anything, any report in terms of this budget, that how much have you spent, that, or what is the process, or what is the progress. And then also, Chairperson, normally if we are going to start for we end the new, the old term to go to the new term, there are things which are supposed to be addressed as well. Let me remind you, actually every year the department is audited by the Auditor General, and I nearly made the mistake not to, to come to that one, but now it came to my mind that may you please take us on board in terms of compliance, in terms of some of the key audit findings with due to recommendations and in terms of fundings, in terms of the what was recommended, have you able to comply so far? Because each and every now and then we're given, I mean, some of the full soldiers to assist us to evaluate ourselves. Have you managed to comply with some of the things which was raised by the Auditor General? And last one, last two, Chairperson.
Minute is gone.
Please, Chairperson. Please, Chairperson. Yes. Chairperson, to you, do you still remember the way, I don't want us maybe to go back, just to praise on with the things which I'm, the thing which I'm going to highlight. The issue of inities. Remember, last time we had a serious problem which the court, I mean, lot of court pending cases in the previous year. How far are you with that regard? Because there were also financial implications in terms of those courts which were there. And the last one is the issue of license card. The licenses which have been changed to the cards. How far are you, have we finalized, maybe minimized some of the challenges? Because previously we had challenges. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
1 minute.
Honorable Ramatlaka.
One part I forgot to raise is the audited. Do you get the audited statement on the transfer to Santaco as a body?
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Minister. I just need to impress upon yourself that eventually the taxi recapitalization program design and implementation is talking to the issues that we have been really upbeat about in terms of value chain, upstream and downstream. And I hope as the department will be doing that, cognizance will be taken that we would really appreciate if we can see the cooperatives now coming into play. Whether it's the very taxi industry developing cooperatives, because definitely this is one of the things which actually we are very, very upbeat about. The Msundusi matter has been spoken to. That is an integrated transport network. But I need to indicate, Minister, that As we are talking about integrated transport planning network, part of the things that we're seeing and observing is that it no longer is integrated transport network, because you go to George, you go to Pretoria now, taxis are being removed. And therefore, it doesn't talk to the question of integration of this transport network. It be rail, it be buses, it be taxis. If a taxi is removed and the license, like the provincial regulations entities here in Cape Town, wherein you would be told that your permit has expired, and therefore it becomes an automatic thing that you have to give way. I don't believe that these policies were meant to accommodate the other transport mode and remove the other transport mode like we are seeing it. Definitely, you can see from the financials that PRASA has had very serious challenges, because if you can't spend CAPEX, that's one of the things which becomes a very, very serious challenge. And hopefully the interim board should be able to give us a plan as to how they're going to be dealing with the issues. On page 11 of your ITP, a consolidated report on monitoring of the 10 priority pilots was compiled. I assume that you're talking to the integrated transport plan, and assuming that you're talking to the cities, 10 of the 13 cities which are there, we would really appreciate the acting DG if you can be able to furnish the portfolio committee with the consolidated report on monitoring, because that's one of the things that we believe is very, very crucial. Monitoring and evaluation of the impact of the ITP is very, very, very crucial. We should be able to say 12 years down the line, this is where the integrated transport planning has taken us, and value for money, as my colleague has already spoken to, and then we're able to move forward as to, is it desirable or need we look into other things which actually needs to be tailor-made in this regard or in that regard, so that we're able to have a policy that can be able to stand the test of time. I want to, Minister, indicate that, you know, as we're doing oversight, we saw it 2 years, 3 years ago to be precise, that it is not working in the Northwest, particularly on roads, because what you have on paper is not necessarily what you will see on site. We visited N12, and I think one of my colleagues really impressed upon the fact that when we were having an engagement with Sandra, my colleague indicated that he had two tire bursts on the N12, and assuming that it belongs to Sandra. But knowledgeably from Sandral today, we now know that N12 belongs to the Department of Roads and Public Works in Northwest. We went to help the area around Kharangua, Mabopani, those, and on paper, we could see that there has money which has been expended. But on the ground, there was nothing, nothing at all. And we have since requested the department to say, you need to do a audit. That was then. And now that there is an administration, we're very elated, because these things that we have seen on site, we went to Muritile municipality, it was just chaos in this respect. And We believe that now that the department has taken over the administration of the Department of Transport and Road in the Northwest, the issues that we have been raising will really come to fruition. People must be arrested, those who we believe that there has been a lot of unauthorized expenditure, a lot of fruitless expenditure in the Department of Transport, as we were able to see it on the ground. And lastly, I want to say, Minister, that it becomes very, very important that we are able to look into marine issues. We had a presentation from the rescue services here in the Western Cape, and part of the challenges that they were having is the tools of trade, as in whenever there is a challenge at sea, they sometimes do not even have sufficient or proper ships or boats that they can be able to run into the sea rescue program. And we have said to them that engage the Department of Defense, engage the Department of Agriculture so that they can be able to raise. And I think, Minister, it will be very important to safeguard our shores and make sure that people who actually are dealing with that are properly resourced in making sure that not only are they looking at life, they are also looking at the environmental issues that can impact the people. They are also looking at a number of things which actually we believe that for us to safeguard the issues of the marine, because you've got criminals out there at shore who actually will come and harvest fauna, flora and everything within our shores. And it is very, very important that we are able to look at. That was the last thing that I wanted to talk to. Honourable members, there is no second take because the minister must leave in the next 20 minutes. Minister?
Thank you, Minister, and thank you, Honourable Chair. We, with the addition of the previous questions, we are now at 57 questions. But maybe let me just start from...
Honour, DG, Acting DG, you know the rules that if there are questions that needs to be substantiated, you can do it in writing to the Secretary of the Committee. You can deal with some of these questions that you believe you can be able to cleanse off immediately.
I was actually going to suggest that, Chairperson, because seeing that there are so many, perhaps we can just take a few and then we will then provide others in writing. Chairperson, the NetMap the priority projects in ITP are the NetMap projects. They are not the IPTNs. Chair, we are part of the intervention program in the Northwest. Part of our earlier assessment that we took to Cabinet were matters related to roads. There's an arrangement in terms of allocation of functions in the Northwest in that roads is in public works. So the lead department will be the National Department of Public Works, but it has also opted for Section 101B. So we will be working together with them on the roads function. And then on the transport function, we collaborate with the Department of Civilian Secretariat, because the provincial department there is called Community Safety and Transport Management. I think more than other areas which are very clear, in our case, we've got the split responsibility when it comes to both roads and the transport function. But we are now there in the Northwest, and the assessment looked into the annual reports, looked into the audit reports and related, looked into our own PRMG reports. So we definitely hope that we could be able to then assist in that space. We are discussing this afternoon with the minister in terms of the intervention team. Chair, I wanted to read something, but because of time, I may not necessarily read it. Chair, when we decided that PRASA may not need additional money, it was because PRASA had spent about 26%, and it was towards the end of the financial year of their CAPEX. It is sitting with cash reserves of around 14 billion. Now that is that was going to be a challenge in terms of transferring some more money. Now what happens to that money, Chair? The question was, what do you do with this money that is unspent? Because underspending is also a spend. Chair, the Minister of Finance in one of the meetings here in Parliament said that the Department of Transport has saved the country from a huge deficit in terms of its withholding funds that may not necessarily be used immediately by PRASA. I just wanted to throw that in. Bad as it might sound in terms of underspending, but government was able to live within what they call expenditure ceiling, the totality of government. And then we were cited as that department that contributed to the to those kind of outcomes. I think there's from the records of Parliament there should be that statement, and then how it has assisted the country in that respect. Of course, hopefully now that there's new blood at PRASA, CAPEX will start to pick up. Because we do agree that spending on infrastructure do create jobs and does contribute tremendously to economic growth. The tools of trade for the National Sea Rescue Institute, we do provide support to that. We will obviously get the details and then see what is it that we can assist with them. But we do share that responsibility in terms of safeguarding of the shores, more especially in the oceans, with SAMHSA on the one hand, but also the DEA, Department of Environmental Affairs, and further away on the outer seas is the Department of Defense. So we'll just check where our responsibility lies, and then do you get audited statements from SANTACO? We do not give them a cent in the beginning of the financial year if we did not get audited financial statements. On the money that we transfer, on the 21 million, that one is separate from the money that is in the trust fund, which is the proceeds from scrapping. And unfortunately, when it was established, the trust fund, it had specific objectives in terms of which areas it can assist. So it's not all in all the areas. In the main, it was a buying of and renting of offices and buying of equipment, furniture, stationery for the provincial offices, for the provincial council offices. Now, not even SANTACO National get a cent from that trust account, from the scrapping process. I just wanted to make that very clear. It is the provinces, it is basically the members of the provinces that come and allocate in terms of the needs at the provinces. Chair, yes, the revised tax recap, and I'll take it with the issue around when is it ending. The new approach does emphasize other services in the value chain, priority will definitely be given to financial services within the whole program. When last year the taxi people blocked the freeways, they complained about being charged high interest fees by the banks and other financial service providers, and then they blocked the streets. And then the one question we asked them was, why do you block the streets? Why don't you form your own cooperative bank? Who needs who here? Do you need the banks or do the banks need you? And one of the answers is in the new program, in that should they be in a position to form and be assisted to form financial services, they will no longer have problems of them being labeled high-risk borrowers, as is the case now. And we want to believe that that would then assist them tremendously. Inatis has been transferred to RTMC. We no longer have Inatis in the department anymore. Together with everything that has got to do with it. So we did a Section 41 of the PFMA to 42 of the PFMA to the RTMC. We lock, stock and barrel. We're not saying that we might not get somebody who takes chances and come and say, you still owe me money from 6-7 years back, but we'll deal with those matters as they come in. We do not have an expenditure item or a budget item in terms of scholar transport when it comes to provision at national. It is a function of the provinces, whether it is in education or in transport, but the contracting authority for scholar transport are provincial departments. So we, in our case, we only do coordination and monitoring, and now that we have done and finished with the policy, we are monitoring the implementation of that policy. So we might not have a huge expenditure item for scholar transport services because we do not provide those. We want to agree that firstly, let me just indicate the 13 cities were identified in the 2007 strategy, public transport strategy. It's now 10 years down the line. I think that strategy needs to be reviewed. But it coincides with the very same fact that since the start of the PTNG, it was PTIS at the time, to date, we have spent in the region of 40 billion. The one question we need to ask ourselves is that do we see 40 billion worth of investment on the ground? And to a naked eye, the answer might obviously be a no. Now that calls for us to review how we then support these cities. We have produced what we call a public transport transformation plan. It talks about a differentiated approach. There are areas where we want to intervene with BRTs that do not necessarily need BRTs. They need quality public transport services. The minister has agreed with the MECs to a special MINMEC where we are going to talk all matters public transport, including transfers, grants, and contracts. So that meeting will happen. We had planned to have it before the end of June. We will still work towards that timeline, but if not met, it won't be long after that. But we are reviewing. The study that we have done and the research, just answering the question, what have you been doing, is that if should they be BRTs, it will not be the BRT in the sense of the BRT that we know it. But also it can be confined to 5 metros. Joburg, Pretoria, Ekurhuleni, Durban, and Cape Town. In the other cities, you need good quality public transport. And then you may, of course, prioritize public transport when it comes to right-of-way on the roads. That then also brings me to the issue of the role of minibus taxis. Now, we don't have necessarily a national blueprint for how should the model be in terms of the cities talking and negotiating and agreeing or disagreeing with the operators. What the law says, what we have in terms of the Act, the law says that if you introduce integrated public transport networks, the operators that are affected must be engaged and they must have a role in the new system. Now, because it will be different areas, it will be talking to different fare structures, it will be talking to different kilometers and different types of services. Unfortunately, then the cities have been left on their own to negotiate with the taxi industry. But they are given an opportunity to get the best support in terms of negotiations. So they are always supported by the people or person of their choice to come into the onto the negotiation. We cannot necessarily rule out the fact that perhaps somehow they might not be shortchanged in terms of the expectations. But the majority of the cases that we have investigated is that they would have agreed on a particular model, for an example, opt out, to be compensated and leave and get out, because maybe they're enticed by the millions that are being put onto the table. Now, 2 weeks down the line, the 2 or 3 million that they have been paid is gone, it's no longer there. Now, coming to the specific case in point, here in the city of Cape Town, the team today, as we speak, the higher-level team from the department in the public transport branch, is talking to the taxi industry to understand what the issues are here locally, and they will then engage the city and then bring the two parties together to try and resolve what the problems could be. And if somebody reneged on the agreement or the agreement was somehow improper, those are the matters that will be looked at and will be addressed. Incidentally, it was here in the Western Cape, in George, that those allegations first surfaced, and we did do a forensic investigation only to find out that they have agreed on a particular model and they have signs. Now, it is important probably perhaps that before they sign, they are then properly supported and given advice. Chair, this new recap will also, to some extent, not fully, but will address the issue of the quantum of the scrapping. It will increase slightly, depending on what we mean about slightly. But just as an example, when this thing started in 2007, we were paying 50,000, and the price of a new taxi was around 110, 120. It was around 45%. That was enough for a deposit. Now, what has happened is the new vehicles have increased in terms of prices to some 500,000. And then the scraping allowance has been increasing with CPI to an extent that that 45% or so diminished to around 18%. And that is where the problem comes. So the prices of new vehicles became very expensive, and it was no longer therefore an incentive to buy new vehicles. But we are improving that in terms of the new arrangement. Hopefully it will kick in, as envisaged, around September, and then we believe that it should be in a position to assist. This program will not end soon. Why I'm saying this is because in 2009, 2 years into the program, we went to cabinet and said the money that we are receiving will not deal with 135,000 taxis. Now, that is the data we have at the time. 135,000 taxis that we wanted to scrap. That is the figure. And then cabinet then said, no, you will not get any extra money. But what we can allow you to do is that this thing should no longer be a seven-year program. Go and scrap based on the money that you have or you are given annually until the last taxi has been scrapped. Now it means we had to then go beyond the 7 years. Unfortunately, with the life of taxis, somewhere at year 3, depending on how the distance covered, the taxis you have scrapped in the first year, it becomes a scrap again. That is why I'm saying we have designed it that it should not be something that ends, because those taxis will be old again. We are addressing also in the new approach the issue of the cutoff date of 2007 does no longer apply anymore. Now the taxi that will be scrapped will be the taxi that is old and unsafe. So we have taken that out.
Maybe take one more
mission. Oh, okay. Okay, Minister, let me not take any more and just promise the committee that we will cover all the grounds in terms of the remaining questions in writing. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Chair.
In short, Minister?
Yes. Thank you, Chair. Just very briefly, I'll touch on a few points. I was in Germany 2 weeks ago, and I rode in a driverless car. I'm not so sure whether how many generations it will take for us to have that car here. But nevertheless, I'm making that point because I think one of the biggest challenges that we have is support systems to the transport sector. I think I raised this in the budget vote because it's not sustainable, for instance, if we don't invest at the same time in research, development, and innovation in the transport sector. Because taking into account some possible negative impact on some things for jobs, etc. But nevertheless, we're not going to. It's very clear also that the number of points that are being raised here relate to the issue of support systems that we need if we are to have good transport in South Africa. You know, Chair, it also, this thing of the tax recap value chain, upstream and downstream, it's a broader question, this. Because it's about, the future of the tax industry. I pose this to Santaco, where do you see yourselves in the next 10 to 15 years? Do you still want to be counting money at the end of every day, rands and cents, you know, and operating in the manner that fighting over roots, you know, and so on? Do you see yourselves going higher, as it were? But it can't just be a question only for the tax industry. It's for our entire transport sector, especially public transport. As the DG said, we are having a special meeting with the MECs to look into this matter, including the crucial matter of who are we subsidizing as government? You know, is it equitable, this subsidizing that we are doing? How much money are we putting into our drain vis-a-vis the taxi industry, for instance? Is that fair? Is that just? I don't know, the Msunduzi matter, maybe I shouldn't be tempted to talk about it, because together with Honorable Mbanza, it's our home. What I haven't raised, but which I need to say here, which I'm going to raise in the department, is what do we do when there is very little progress where we have invested money? Shouldn't we be looking at interventions? Either we take over completely as the National Department of Transport, or we set mechanisms for course supervision. I think also as the committee we need to think about that concretely. I know there's issue of intergovernmental responsibilities, but at the same time, if we give money, if there is one thing that makes me now not very happy to go home, is that BRT, Yasemaritzburg, which is just not making much progress. It's causing traffic jams that are unbelievable. People are angry, actually, about it. Now, Chair, just lastly on PRASA, I am concerned, very concerned about this. That's what I've said to this board. We're sitting with 14 billion rands that's unspent when we are a country that the president is saying we need investment and we need jobs. So it's something that together we will have to focus on with you playing your oversight role. Because usually also the danger is that when you've got so much money, you end up just wanting to spend it for the sake of spending. Or you throw money at problems. So we need to have very serious engagement with the board. Maybe they are beginning to develop ideas, I'm not so sure. I'm not even sure that they've had a formal board meeting that's forward-looking instead of dealing with problems that they're actually having. Otherwise, thank you very much, Chair. Sorry that I had to go out a bit earlier just to make some urgent phone calls. But thank you very much. These sessions are always helpful and informative. You may think we are doing oversight only. It's more than just oversight, because it also poses certain very important pointers on some things that could be done. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister. I thought that Honorable De Freitas will do a vote of thanks to the Minister. Minister, we really appreciate your presence. Honorable De Freitas will talk to you.
I do thank the Minister. I have no problem with that when you see that it's a Minister that's genuinely interested and keen to deal with these issues that have been standing for way too long. So it's a breath of fresh air. Thank you, Minister.
Thank you. I'm just looking at how the Liberals and the Communists will be able to converge. I wanted to check that. Minister, you're released. It's a new block and of a new dawn. Minister, thank you very much. You're released to go to the National Council of Provinces. Good luck in your presentation to the NCOP. We will be remaining with probably some other people. A division of labor is what today should be able to happen while we are meeting PRASA after lunch. Some are already here. Some are still coming. You're released, Minister. Honorable members, let's take a break and have something to chew. Comfort break also at the same time. We'll be starting again at 2 o'clock. Matabat. Regilena Gwe, Minister can go. The two bills.